In this podcast, I'm going to cover how we in the state of New South Wales of Australia give our 17-year-old or final year students of our secondary school a mark, a grade. It's called band 1 to 6, but really it's universally the A, B, C, D, E, F grade and a mark, how we actually do that. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific, and I'm broadcasting here from Glenbrook, a little village cradled up in the very foothills of the Blue Mountains. The Blue Mountains rise up, then drop down a bit for a little valley, and you can hear obviously some bird sounds, and you'll hear ice cream trucks and children playing in this quiet little hidden valley oasis up here in the Blue Mountains. Let's discuss it for you. Now, obviously people overseas will say, oh, look, I'm really not particularly interested in how Australians actually give a mark to the end of their HSC or to their end of year secondary school people. So we have primary school and secondary school. I don't know how it translates into other countries, and that's called year 12. So there's actually 13 years of education, kindergarten, year 1 up to year 12. And our final year, people leave. They they do four terms of work. A year is broken into four terms. They leave a term early towards the end of their 12th year. That's done by making the 11th year only three terms long, or three quarters long. So it shifts everything up, and they toil away for four terms or four quarters to produce, and at the end of that they sit an examination and produce a mark. Now, what may be interesting to people is how we in Australia organise it, and how it's perceived, or how it's worked out, how the system works out, because there's a sort of a scientific straight way of analysing it, and then how it's played out in practice is very much different, how people understand it. It's a little bit complicated. It's got a tiny fraction of maths, and indeed a lot of people misinterpret that and produce or manage it in a completely different way. So just seeing how that plays out, and how a scientist versus teachers, teaching community, how this plays out, may be of interest to people. So let's get back into our picture. We have this person coming in for their last year of school, and they do certain activities which generate a mark or grade, a mark out of 100, and certain band marks out of 100 produce different grades. So essentially they're going to, at the end of a year's work in a subject, get a mark between 0 and 100, and that will reflect how well they've done. In fact, let us state so far that the year upon year, for particular subjects, no matter how hard they do, everyone produces the same distribution. So what happens is that the marks are manipulated and shaped and reformed such that the raw mark produced from an exam is transformed, mathematically transformed, so it fits the same distribution. So pretty much year after year, the same percentage of people get above in the 90 to 100, the same in the 80 to 90 bracket, and so forth. And that's done by, if you've got a distribution which is a bit shy, all the marks are pushed up uniformly, and they're linearly adjusted such they fit within those grades. You get the same number of people each year produced, and to make sure it's the same standards, there's used to be a standards package to check that people produce the same grade of marks, but essentially to take apart account of the different variation in the intensity or complexity of questions, essentially no matter what year you choose to do it, you will get the same distribution of marks. Now, the distribution of marks actually vary historically between different subjects. So physics, for instance, it's always harder to get above 90% than in chemistry. There's a great fraction of people who get above 90% in chemistry. It's just a historical thing that they've selected that they'll have different distributions for different mark for different subjects. Something which they really haven't thought about historically. They had it, and when they froze it into this system, they froze in time that distribution. So you'll find that different subjects here, if you choose to do a subject in Australia, New South Wales, to get this qualification. And this qualification will be again manipulated mathematically to give you a percentage ranking. All your subjects will be put together and give you a percentage ranking, which will give you entrance into different subjects at university. So it's a bit of a carnival. So you already get three different marks. You get your raw examination mark. You get the raw examination mark, which is converted to a historic distribution. So each year is exactly the same, or miraculously gets exactly the same mark range. And then this mark range, again, is converted into yet another mark, which is simply a combined mark out of 100. It's called an ATAR score. And then this, again, goes into a different categories, so supply and demands determines who gets into different degrees. Sounds a bit complicated. We're going to get backwards from here into a more complicated thing still. Doing the final exam is considered not the full test of a student, partly because it's a bit hard to do all your work during the year with no feedback and get an exam. There's a reason that we have assessments during the year. And also the exam can only test certain things. So in chemistry, there are practical skills. And in physics, for instance, there are practical skills that you have to actually run a physical experiment and write it up. And they're practical things that just would not fit in a final exam. So the way we do have it is that you have your final exam and everyone will get a mark between 0 and 100, and that is averaged with another mark which is provided by the school. So the school will provide a series of marks for their cohort of students, and that will be converted. You'll get two marks, and it will be given the average of the two marks. You can hear these Australian birds in the background, so just enjoy it. It's pretty amazing, these fairly sophisticated birds. Oh dear, sophisticated birds having a bit of a fight here. And these are quite dangerous birds in terms of, oops, I think they're having a territorial fight right in the middle of my podcast. But getting back, so you're a hapless student, you're 17 year old, you've reached your last year at school, you've sat an exam. Moving forward, you've sat an exam, and that exam will produce a mark between 0 and 100, and the school will have produced another mark for you for your work during the year. It's all set up, all fair, and those two marks will be averaged to produce you your final mark, which goes forward. And you then obviously have the idea of fairness. Your exam is fair because everyone sits the same exam at the same time throughout the entire state of New South Wales. So New South Wales has a population of about 5 million. Australia overall has a population less than California, less than Texas, but greater than I think any other state in the United States. And 5 million is a fairly large number of people. There's upwards of 100,000 students completing their HSC, their final year. The high school certificate is called in any year. And that leads to a percentage of people doing physics, for instance. So over a 10-year period, the number of people doing physics has dropped from 24,000 a year to 8,000 people per year. So hard sciences, despite all the talk about STEM, the hard sciences are waxing and waning. But when they do the subject, whatever number of people who do the subject, those, in this case, say, obviously 10,000 candidates will have their marks put into a marking centre, and a procedure will be gone through with a lot of care, a lot of mathematical care, to make sure that everyone gets a fair and justifiable mark. So where the actual questions are scanned, the marks are scanned, the examiner's comments are scanned. And so if you were to challenge why they get such a mark, you'd be able to actually call up the paper, review, see what the marker said, and how the marking scheme, to make sure that you get marked fairly. So let us say that a school, because we've got to get back, because half your marks are from your school, so we'll have to get an idea of how the school actually went. And so in your school, say you have a school of 30 students producing, they will produce, say at the final year, say typically a range of marks between 70 and 90, maybe the range of marks that they produce. So in the exam, of 30 students, the lowest one will get 70, there'll be a few more by 80. Most, about 75% will get between 70 and 85, and then the last quarter will get from 85 to 100. For instance, that's just a hypothetical. So your mark distribution for your school will be between 70 and 90. Someone just watching these birds fighting in front of me. Oh my goodness. Sorry. There should be a video here. It's pretty amazing to watch it happen. It's quite an aggressive fight happening in front of me. Well, let's get back to it. So you've got your mark range between 70 and 90, and it will have, say, an average of 82. Well, those 32 people, put it all in, they've got a average of 82. So some will get below and above, and you'll get an average of 82. So your mark range. Now, what will happen is that this will be taken, even though it's on theory and on pen and paper tests and on multiple choices, this will be taken as the average quality of your cohort of 30 students. Now, you just have to bear with me at the moment. The logic can be argued many ways, but I'm just reporting the way that it's done. So your cohort of 30 students will have a range between 70 and 90 and an average of 82. So what has happened is that the school marks will be taken, and say the school offers a range of marks between 40 and 80. So their range is twice the amount. So the exam range was 20 marks. The school range is 40 marks, between 40 and 80. So this is a hypothetical thing, giving you numbers so that you can remember them or think about them. And what we have to do is take your school marks given to you and convert that through a formula that will reshape those school marks so they have the same characteristics as the exam mark, and therefore, in quotes, possibly be fair. So to be fair, say a large school will have a large number of marks, be possibly a good way of doing it. For a small school with, say, 5 students doing subjects, this is probably a bit more questionable. But at least it's attempting to rule out a school the size that school. Oh my goodness, birds are still fighting like hell. It's pretty amazing to watch it here. Okay, so it's a bit like watching the Battle of Britain with all these birds going around for a big fight. Oh, it's amazing. Okay, so we've got this the exam mark between 70 and 90, the school marks between 40 and 80, and we have to apply a formula to these marks, the school marks, so that they are also between 70 and 90. We have to transform the 40 to 80 to 70 to 90, and we have to also reshape that distribution inside such that it has the average of 82, remembering your marks of 82. So this person will work away at school, produce marks, and this is a way of mathematically saying, evaluating the school mark by the school average to make sure that what happens at the school reflects, is measured by the exam group performance. So that's the way it's done. Now, this is where the confusion comes in. So somewhere, someone said, I know how this is done. And they were a very influential person, and they were able to tell other people. And so it came to be a belief. And I'm going to tell you this here, and I'm going to, at the start, say, this is not how it is done. So please, when you listen to this overseas, you don't have to really worry if you're in Australia, please understand that even though people will tell you quite seriously, this is how it's done, I want to be very clear, ethical here, to say this is not how it's done. So I'll now proceed explaining to you how you get, 40 to 80, move it up to 70 to 90 and have the same average mark. So not how it's done is by, say, I have a distribution of marks between 90 and 70 from the exam. And what I do is I just take the students and rank them from 80 to 100. I get ranks, and the highest ranked student then gets the highest ranked mark, HSC. It doesn't matter what the mark is, it gets the highest HSC mark, and so forth. And so essentially I have the same distribution of marks but different names against it, and so therefore by logic I have to have the same range and same average. And so it means that you'll have a distribution of marks, and doesn't matter if one really excelled at school, was much better at practical work and got a really high mark, that person's very high mark is not going to be reflected by the same distribution. And so there seems to be a sort of logic. That is one way of doing it. And again, let me finish. This is not how the HSC is done. There's a special caveat. Having believed that this particular method is used, you have a school mark with the exact two students having the same top mark. What is believed is that that same top mark is given as an average of the two top marks. So that, say if someone got 90 and 88, rather than giving a 90 to one student and an 88 to the other, they give 89 to each. And again, this is deeply, deeply confused. And based on this confusion, there's a further thing that you should manipulate the marks given from the school to the HSC such that you don't give two students the top mark, you always differentiate them. So this process, magic process, which doesn't happen, is not used. It's very complex. And the overall thought of confirmation bias, all the things that we scientists try to avoid, is thrown out the window, and you actually go back and manipulate the school marks so people don't have the same top mark. You know, if I can convince you to, even though you've heard it, it's useful to know what people think and the prevailing idea. So what does actually happen? Well, it's actually reported in the school, the education department website. It's actually a little bit complicated because they try and say it in words, in paragraph words, with examples, and perhaps this is the best, the worst way to convey a mathematical idea, given that we have developed maths. So essentially, what happens is that I have a range of marks from 40 to 80, and I have to move that range so it begins at 70. So I subtract 40 and add 70. Then the marks I have to actually scale backwards. I have to actually, at a first crude example, mean that every additional mark above 40 is only half a mark. And so the marks will actually only go from, so from 40 to 60. And then I move that 40 upwards. So I start at 70 and I get a distribution of marks. So if I get 42, that's one mark additional over, and that 42 goes to 61. Let's see if you can work that out. So just by a simple rescaling, a simple linear rescaling, and a simple starting changing the base mark, I can actually get the base mark and the top mark exactly the same. So that's mathematically okay, but of course we have the difference now that the students at a school will have a different distribution of marks, so their average will be different. So I have to add something to make this happen. And so rather than having varied scale, will be just a half mark each. So I had a range of 40. To reduce that range to 20, I now reduce your incremental mark above the base by a factor of 2, so that a half mark each. Now, in order to actually push or adjust that distribution, there's something, a mathematical term called chirp. And chirp is where the actual frequency changes linearly as you move along. So in this case, initially for each mark you have to award 0.5, and that will give you a certain average. If you want to increase the average, just put the average in general, you will start off by actually for each mark awarding 0.6, and drop each incremental step down. By the end, the final increment will be 0.4. So it's 0.6 plus something or other plus 0.5, and eventually the last thing you add is 0.4. By the time you stack up all the individual marks you add up, you still have a distribution, a 20 range, except the range is concertina pulled together at the end, and that lifts your overall average. Consequently, if you wanted to drop your overall average, the school had gave a bunching right up the top, one or two marks really low down, you'd start to pull that average down. You'd start off with 0.4 and end up with your final mark step up at 0.6. It's called a linear chirp, something very common in science, something that you can say, oh yes, I understand that, move on, let's move on. Now of course this means sort of a number of things. I'll just recap, I'll give you a few physics things. Look, the birds, when they chirp, they do exactly that. Yeah, high, low. A gravitational wave coming in will chirp. The frequency will go from low to high as you go in. The space in between beats will change as you go across. A lot of components. Look, there's just so innumerable number of scientific components which have this chirp. So this is sort of a fundamental thing to understand in science. So let's just recap. We have the exam mark, which is calibrated against the rest of the state. That's clean. I then have the school mark, and I calibrate the school against the rest of the state and against by actually ensuring the school mark gets converted such that the school gets the same exam mark range and the same exam mark average, but I don't actually re-correspond, move students from side to side, and there is no need to come in a second time and manipulate your school marks such that you don't get the same difference. And of course, if three or four students at the school do get the same top mark, that's really not going to have any effect across them. Now, there's a few things, so that's how it's done, and it is interesting that if in education system you're told, you know, this is the way it's done, it's obviously incorrect. You put your hand up and said, well, can I discuss? No, you can't discuss it with us. Can we discuss the maths? No, this has been developed by mathematicians. And so you really can't progress. So I dare say throughout the school system, throughout New South Wales, I've heard it innumerable. In fact, I've never heard it described correctly. I've always been to meetings where people have described it, and there is no opportunity to actually explain the real mathematical version through. I think the interesting thing for people is to see a system which is really a customary system, i.e. it teaches customary knowledge and a customary image of real science, and then when it gets to the actual mathematics of it, again, the way that the mathematics is treated, or how you understand the maths, is treated in a customary way. So it's not whether the maths is real or what it's actually done. It's who knows and the structure of going through. And at the final result, we produce a piece, yet another customary piece of knowledge, and that is an agreed value of a particular person, an agreed path to go through. So as we've taught the small kids from a young age the days of the week, which is customary knowledge, there's actually no physical mathematical way you can prove it. This is entire encapsulated customary system. So you can understand how it's very difficult as a scientist to actually breach this world, and you're not necessarily interested in breaching it, you just try and do the right thing. And this podcast, I suppose, will be of interest to people overseas, because you may have an analogous system happening. It may not be Marx, it may be some other aspect, and it will be interested to some HSC students who want to really understand and not become stressed. So a lot of students become very highly stressed now because so-and-so's, two people have done the exam, right, and one student has got one mark better than the other student. The two top students, one mark's got one mark better than the other. Now, if that student can actually argue, and that very high-ranked student can argue in the customary knowledge system, that person can actually get above that student and access that top HSC marks in that view that the mark ranks are the same, you just change the names. So students become really highly stressed about marks, because they're very highly interested in ranking, and the idea is that I suppose the ranking really in the real world, so in the real way that's done in science, the ranking doesn't matter. It's just adjusted. Students will be interested. Some teachers will be interested in listening to this to actually work out how it's actually done. And I suppose I'm not distressed. All I'm doing is having produced, I think, up to 100 podcasts. It's about time to get onto this particular topic, and it's about the right time for me to practice being able to speak coherently. And for a long time in my cardiac rehab, it's about time to get onto, which is a rather detailed, complicated topic to talk about and to present a picture to you in the air, so to speak, without diagrams. I have produced a YouTube video of it, and it is interesting. So I have actually gone down and written a computer LabVIEW program which just shows you the actual scaling and chirping effects, and it shows you as a brick wall. The YouTube is there. What's interesting is that this YouTube and video is very good, but it's not strong enough to beat customary knowledge, which is here's so-and-so, he's described it. What's why I've described it to many other schools, and I know friends who know friends who are mathematicians, and there are mathematicians up there. And at the end of the day, they describe something which actually physically doesn't happen. So... If you can imagine that customary knowledge, you produce a YouTube and something like that, it's not going to penetrate. It may well be that a podcast may not penetrate, and it's all, it's not said in any anger or to disrupt it. It's just to contemplate it on two levels. A, getting it right for the benefit of the students and the teachers, and to calm the place down. But B, to also contemplate what's the sort of system we have in which actual real knowledge has to take a back seat to the customarily advised knowledge. And if that's so, how much of the overall system is like this, and why is this system supporting this customary knowledge? I hope that's not too deep. But in the meantime, thank you for listening, and please keep on doing science. That's what we need you to do. It's get out there, develop, not reinforce your beliefs, but develop a understanding of belief systems and the sensitivity to belief systems, and to try and understand how the use of belief systems work. So again, as a scientist, I can see the customary belief system, the actual mathematical belief systems, and rather than getting in there and fight, there are two systems, and what does it mean? So that's really the scientific view of it all. Thank you for listening.